Good morning. Welcome to Wildflower Zendo this Easter morning, 2002. As I'm sure most of you are aware, we are in preparation and preparing to conduct an all-day sitting on April 14th, 2 weeks from today. And this is a very auspicious opportunity for us to engage in some really deep and intensive Zazen practice. The theme of our all-day sitting is Buddha's birthday, broad band awakening. And broad band awakening is a new term that we are going to be talking about, examining, looking at, and savoring, tasting. From this perspective, as American Buddhists, we're very privileged members of a rather exclusive set. By and large, we're fantastically wealthy in comparison to the rest of our sisters and brothers and people on the planet. We may be aware of this, we may know this in the intellectual sense, but it's rare that we find ourselves in a third world country experiencing the grinding poverty that most of the world's population endures day in and day out throughout their lives. And even if we are able to go to such places, we never really experience this sort of living because we maintain our status and privilege as Americans, as tourists. And that insulates us from the direct experience of the people. We may recognize our privileged status as wealthy Americans and our status as American Buddhists, allegedly having some insight into the suffering of all beings, but by and large, in reality, we're simply clueless in samsara. We've grown up in a cocoon of materialism. Every aspect of our lives has been shaped by physical, psychological, spiritual, political, social, economic, and ecological materialism. Even our Dharma studies take on the taint of materialism. supporting the power over dynamic, control and one-upmanship. The Buddha Dharma is seen as a fantastic treasure, an answer to our quest for truth amid this ocean of materialism. It offers much wisdom in seeing things from alternative perspectives. And these perspectives are eagerly accepted here in the West as tools to see beyond the materialistic pseudo-culture that we find ourselves immersed in. What may not be so apparent is that we have a tendency to hold on to sets of preconceived notions which are flavored by this immersion in materialism. And these notions are about the nature of Dharma and about the experience of awakening. I recently read an article by a Buddhist teacher in one of the popular American Buddhist magazines. And the article declared that every aspect of our lives is the result of actions performed in the past. And I was really taken aback by this declaration because to me it represents the epitome of deterministic thinking. And it's a totally uncritical acceptance of a supposed Buddhistic teaching, which essentially has served to oppress and maintain the common people in the East in bondage to authority. Every aspect of our lives is not predetermined by what we naively call karma. Let's get rid of this childish notion. Karma means volitional action. There are forces in the universe that operate outside of karma. These forces are non-volitional, random, even wild, unpredictable and unaccountable. And they're not necessarily in the category of any kind of neatly ordered law. Karma and vipaka, action and result, are part of a whole. There are other activities, events that happen in reality other than those that can be ascribed to volitional action. If we're walking down the sidewalk and unconsciously step on an ant and end its life and kill it there on the spot, there is no karma. This is not karma. There's no volition. However, if we deliberately choose to step on and kill that creature, then we have produced karma. This simple-minded, incomplete, childish view of Buddha Dharma that makes karma into a you know, totally deterministic universe is really, it's very much a nightmare of totalitarianism. This is the attempt of the ego, the attempt of this false notion of separate individuality to order the universe to its bidding. Initially, when we approach Buddhist teachings and we set foot on the path, we're involved in the spontaneous germination of something called bodhicitta, which is the awakening of the idea that there's something more in life than our apparently limited views. But bodhicitta is only potential. And the path is not some kind of clearly marked highway that we can enter onto and are conveyed to from one point to another simply by keeping in the proper lane and following the signs. It's not like that. In fact, the term path itself is kind of inaccurate. A more appropriate description might be an alleged general direction. And this general direction provides us with the concept of awakening as simply a possibility. And at first, it's a very vague notion, rather like a dream of longing for salvation. And initially, due to our immersion in materialism, we hold on to a lot of sets of views surrounding the notion of awakening, but we're still very much asleep. So we do want to awakening, but we want to do, we do want to awaken, but we want to do it on our own terms and only on a personal level. Having engaged in some practice and having studied some and perhaps begun to experience alternative states of consciousness, we become enamored by this so-called Buddha Dharma, as though it were somehow magical. The teachings appeared to be so profound and so beyond our own levels of perception that we develop a tendency to accept what is offered as Buddha Dharma without question and without critical analysis. In our rush to attain, we abandon critical thought. However, awakening in the personal sense, as the experience of Kensho in this Zen tradition, is all that most Buddhist practitioners are aware of. But that, from this perspective, is a limited view. The notion of broadband awakening is absent in traditional Dharma transmission. And this has a lot to do with the political, social, and psychological perspectives held within the Asiatic countries, which gave birth and propagated the Buddha Dharma. The human condition, the human mind, is universal, East or West. This notion of the mysterious Eastern mind versus the Western mind is overrated. East or West, neurosis involves refusing to see things clearly and precisely as they are. Broadband awakening is a notion whose time has arrived. It is very much a sign of the times, as it is a view which is necessitated by events and directions in the world which are unique and have never before existed. There's a very famous photograph, and I'm sure everyone's seen it, that was taken on the last Apollo flight returning from the moon in December 1972. And this photograph shows the Earth as a full disk, fully illuminated disk, and it reveals Africa, Antarctica, the Indian and the Atlantic Oceans from a view 23,000 miles out in space. Never before in history have the inhabitants of this blue planet seen our world as a whole. This visual perspective, coupled with the technological driven explosion in communication, the technologically driven potential damage to the human race from weapons of war, the technologically driven destruction of the environment, and the technologically driven increase in corporate control of our resources and social structures are unique in human history. We've never before had to face such potential destruction as a planetary community. So broadband awakening involves awakening in the personal sense, the traditional realization of true nature, kensho. But it also encompasses awakening in the psychological, social, economic, ecological, and political realms. It addresses the issue of the so-called awakened master harboring deep-rooted psychopathology, as well as the tendency towards monastic isolationism and political laissez-faire. It addresses the urgency of global ecological crisis, which threatens the life of the planet as an entirely new global perspective. Broadband awakening confronts the unethical and unequal distribution of wealth brought about by economic materialism, corporate hegemony, racism and classism. Likewise, it addresses responsible stewardship of the environment, the conservation and renewal of natural resources. And politically, it seeks to divest the political process from influence by business and move toward true governance through principles of openness and full accountability to the people of the present and those who follow. So these are some of the aspects of broadband awakening that we will delve into during our session, during our all-day sitting in 2 weeks. Part of the practice here also involves taking part in activities which bring about change and progress within our community. And the Engaged Zen Foundation, which is the active arm that runs Wildflower Zen, though, and initially I founded this organization to do prison work, and it has sort of grown to become a very much human rights and progressive organization concerned with making the world a better place for all beings, not just prisoners. We are going to be putting together, sponsoring a bus to take people to Trenton on Wednesday, May 15th, where we will be taking part in a march against police brutality and racial profiling, which is a very timely issue here in New Jersey. And this is sponsored by the Coalition for Justice, the People's Organization for Progress, the Newark Coalition of Neighborhoods, the Bergen Action Network, and the Engaged Zen Foundation. This is happening on a Wednesday, May 15th. I urge people to purchase tickets. We have these souvenir tickets right here, and you can become a 21st century freedom rider. And it's really important that we get people out there to take part in this, because this is what participatory democracy is all about. This is our obligation as citizens, our obligation as people walking on the path of the awakened state of mind, to take part in activities that are designed and intended to make our society a better place. This is very much a proactive dharma, where we're taking part in things very much on a participatory level. So please help us fill up the bus. It's $15, and we'll be, I think, leaving from Ridgewood, although we may change that to Paramus as time goes on. It depends on the availability of parking. We may be using a church in Paramus that will give us a parking lot where everyone can park their cars, which will make it more convenient. So are there any questions? It'll be leaving at 9 a.m. And again, it's quite a ways away, so we do have plenty of time. And we're looking forward to being able to fill the bus. In fact, I have to fill the bus. The bus seats 45 people, and we're asking $15 a piece. And the bus itself costs $500. So please join us and take part in this event. Any other? questions, commentary?
Not about this issue, but is it possible for two people that have reached some sort of broadband enlightenment to be on opposing sides of a political issue?
No. No, it's not. It is a strong statement, but it's about time we made such statements. We have to recognize that there are our brothers and sisters and people in the world who are suffering and in pain. Enough is enough. No more. Here we stand.
If I may, I think that two people in an enlightened state would have to agree to that state.
Damn right.
As the best methods to address that condition, potentially, there could be alternative thoughts.
Right.
Could be perceived as disagreements.
Well,
in reality.
You bring them in front of me, and I'll fix it. Well, you never know. You never know.
Let me ask you something.
Is it one direction or multiple directions? I'm asking because I think that
there is no direction. I mean, there really is no direction. There is clarity of vision. They're seeing things clearly.
Yeah, but any action has a direction.
Right.
And in my view of things, I agree with the principle, because it's a principle of compassion. We are not a part of the world or the species of mankind. I fully agree. However, having been in those trenches before, I know that there are risks of being vulnerable. Which is not the point, because we have that risk in every step of our lives. And question the notion of what is life and what is wrong. I would say that the general principle is precisely to be engaged, participant, and on the means. Fundraise and directions are multiple. And even sometimes it comes very quickly. But we're just reflecting about what the Quakers basically have had a tradition. In the sense that in those communities, people have been on one side or another side of the struggle, provided that they did.
Mm. whatever you do, don't wobble. Do something. I did an interview with a magazine called Insubordination Magazine, which is a publication that's put out by some really, really progressive teenage kids, black bloc anarchists. And they asked me about violent revolution. You know, and they asked me specifically about Ward Churchill's essay on nonviolence as psychopathology. And of course, you know, this was a setup. They just wanted to prod the old monk to see what spewed forth. And I told them that I agreed 100% that either being totally hooked into nonviolence or totally hooked into violence, either one is psychopathology. So my position came down in favor of diversity of tactics. Nonviolence is effective. Sometimes violence is effective. Depends. And they said, well, if you agree with our statement, when do you think it's an appropriate time for violent revolutionary action? And I said, well, I don't know. How about after lunch? How about after lunch? It's a good time. We can be violent after lunch, but let's have lunch first. On that note, it's time for coffee. We will leave informally.